job done. I'm Craig Windham, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Annie E. Casey Foundation, promoting lifelong family connections for children and youth. On the web at aecf.org.
News from NPR is made possible by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Support for today's broadcast comes from Warden Martin Subaru in Savoy. At Subaru's assembly plant in Lafayette, Indiana, a zero landfill status is designed to save cost and our future environment. It is part of what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Information online at wardenmartin.com or 352-8910.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580, FM 90.9 HD2, and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, our monthly show about computers, we take up this topic each month, usually on the third Monday of the month, but we're here this month on the last Monday of the month due to the holiday honoring the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Our guest this month is Peter Kimball. He is with the University of Illinois. He's with the University's Technology Consortium. The consortium is called Fast 3, and it's located at the Center for Teaching Excellence. If you have a question, a comment, or a concern about computers, give us a call. If you're listening in the Champaign-Urbana area today, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, if it would be a toll call, use the toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. WILL. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Did
Happy
you
New
have
Year.
A good holiday season?
It was good. It was away from work for a while and also played around with some new versions of Windows and such. So it was fun.
Okay. Play is good. Play is good. We've got some callers who are already ready and hoping to join us here in just a moment. And our technical director, Jason Croft, is working fast and furious to get us get the callers on board here. And we're going to take our first call now on line one, a listener in Muhammad. Hi.
Hi. I have a problem on I have a laptop, which is Windows XP. Each time I double-click an icon, it goes to search. I've been trying to change it the preference so I can have open rather than search. I can't seem to get it done. I was wondering if I could get some help.
So you are clicking on, double-clicking on the icon for Internet Explorer or?
Any icon on the computer, control panel, any icon that I click on, it goes to search instead of opening it.
Oh, okay. So you double-click on it and you're just seeing, I'm not quite clear what you're seeing, you're seeing the...
When I double-click an icon, say, for example, I double-click, if for example, I had a document on the desktop.
Yes.
If I double-click the icon, instead of opening that document, it goes to a screen that says unable to find whatever it was, unable to find it, because it goes to the search window, you know, where it says search it. It opens up.
Up to the search window, yes.
Yes.
And then in order to open a document, I presume what you have to do is you have to, for example, if it's a Microsoft Word document, you then just have to open Microsoft Word via the program menu and then open your document from there?
Yeah, I have to open it, I have to right-click it, then go down to open, to click open to be able to open it.
Okay.
And when I right-click the document, I see... You know, it starts at the very top when it says search with, I think that's the very first thing that is on the top. And when I look at the, I have a desktop, when I look on that order, when I right-click it, the very top one is open.
Right.
But now my laptop, the very top one is search, and I'm trying to see if I can change that search rather than putting search on top, search somewhere in the middle, because search is, in my desktop, search is like way like 3 or 4 from on top. So I'm trying to see if I can change that order so I have open on top and search somewhere down.
Does this happen for, is this for particular kinds of documents? For example, any Microsoft Word document, I presume when you double-click on something like the icon for some program such as Internet Explorer or My Computer, that opens normally.
Yes, when I search Internet Explorer, it opens normally. If I go to even Control Panel and double-click it, it goes to search. It says search with.
Okay. Well, what's happened, apparently, is that the reason that the search comes up is because it's either not able to find the program or not able to find the document, and that's going to involve what you can try doing initially is when you open something like double-clicking on My Computer.
Yes.
And then you would go to, let me just see if I can bring this up here so I can direct you to the appropriate place.
Okay.
If you then choose in the menu bar up at the top of My Computer, choose Tools.
Okay.
And then you'll see Folder Options as a drop-down from that.
Okay.
And then what you'll see is a series of tabs at the top, and those one of those tabs is reads File Types.
Okay.
You'll then, after a moment, get a whole bunch of different file types. And what you'll want to make sure, if you scroll down, you will find, for example, that there is a doc type for Microsoft Word or whatever type you've got. It might be DocX, but I would guess doc for Word 93 through 97 through 2003, rather. And then, assuming you are logged in as an administrator, the first thing I would try is make sure that when you click on something with that extension, that it actually knows that it should open it with Microsoft Word and it knows where Microsoft Word is.
Okay.
That is generally, that list of file types is generally where Windows goes to see what should I do when I double click on something.
Okay.
That would be my first suggestion. That's kind of the most obvious thing to do. The other suggestion I would have, because there are several different variations, would be to try a few searches under Google, say something like files don't open when double-clicked or something, or maybe something like if it's only Microsoft Word, say something like Word documents don't open, and you'll find that there are several links there. Word documents, I found one. Word documents won't open with a double click, and that was actually gives me a whole series about 30 or 40 relevant links, and one of those difficulties will be the problem. The good thing about having access to tools such as Google is that you're not the first one to have the particular problem. So I would try double-checking that file association. And then if you can't find it, look at some of the other common causes. And again, the Google search would just be something like Word documents won't open with double-click, which is exactly what's happening. And I see a whole bunch of options, and probably not worth our time right now until you explore this to go through the half dozen or things that are there. But CNET has a site, www.computing.net. So there are a number of very reputable sites that people have written comments about that.
You say www.computing.net.
What you want to do is just go to bring up Google to bring up a Google search, and then in the Google search panel, just type. I would suggest typing Word just in that search panel. Word document won't open with double click.
Okay.
And actually, I don't even have to type the whole thing, and I find a whole list of things coming up there. And I double-checked several of these just now as we were chatting, and one of the first suggestions in each case is to check that file association, which we just mentioned. So that's where I would go if you if the file association doesn't work, or if you're not sure about that file association, go and take a look at a couple of those documents in the first place, because people have had the same things happen.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Good luck. Next, we go and take a call from a listener in Champaign on line two. Hi.
Hi. I don't know too much about this Wi-Fi. I bought a new laptop, and it has it, and I'm picking it up about 4 miles away from the place it says I'm getting it from. But my question is, if I bought a new desktop, say, do I have to have a regular paid monthly internet connection in order to use that Wi-Fi?
So the Wi-Fi, which is simply being able to connect to another device or to the internet without having to run a cable, it really depends on what you're wanting to do. What sort of internet access do you currently have? How do you connect to the internet?
Right now I want high speed, so I've got the Verizon little plug, USB plug.
Okay, so you are using Verizon's, you're essentially out in the country a bit then?
Yeah.
And you are using Verizon's cellular service basically for internet connection, which is what, $30, $40, $50 a month or something of that sort. Yes, what you'll have to do, that particular kind of a connection, which is on your desktop machine currently or on your laptop?
Both.
You have two of the cards, or you're sharing the...
Well, you just pull out the plug and put it in.
Okay, sure. So you're just swapping the card from one to the other. And what you want to do, that is generally not the same kind of a communication that Wi-Fi is.
Uh-huh.
So if you were to have just a laptop or a desktop that had Wi-Fi access, although mostly that would make more sense for a laptop, it's not going to be able to communicate with the Verizon network unless you've actually got that card plugged into it.
Mm-hmm.
There is a bit more complicated option if you wanted to be able to use a system wirelessly without having to swap the card into it, and I'm not sure to the extent that Verizon is going to support or be very happy with this.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had that Verizon cellular access card, internet access card in your desktop machine, and you set up your desktop machine for internet sharing, and you had a wireless access point, which would be, you know, about $40 or $50, a separate device that most people plug into things like their cable modem so they can have a whole bunch of connections to their cable access. But you could actually run that from, instead of plugging it into a cable, plugging it into your desktop machine, and then have wireless access from your laptop to the wireless access point. Netgear and D-Link and Cisco and all those companies make it, and there are a lot of them at Best Buy, and then have that get its internet access from your desktop, which has the Verizon cellular card in it. That could work, but that would not be a trivial thing to set up, and it probably violates Verizon's terms of agreement.
Yeah, I was just wondering if there was any way to connect to the Wi-Fi without belonging to a regular internet connection like Verizon or...
Well, you can certainly use the Wi-Fi to connect. You would, for example, if you have your desktop plugged into an access point, you're still going to need... what you don't have when you are getting this laptop with wireless is you don't have anything for it to connect to currently. You would need what's called a wireless access point. See, basically a little radio. Most people plug it into their cable modems, but it could still be used to communicate between your laptop and your desktop machine to share files and move them back and forth.
Okay.
But the laptop itself cannot communicate directly through its wireless connection with your desktop unless you either have that separate wireless access point device or unless you have a separate non-Verizon cellular but a separate wireless network card plugged into the one of the ports on the desktop.
Okay.
So just having the laptop with wireless by itself is not quite all you need.
Uh-huh. Okay. That's what I was wanting to know.
Yep.
Okay, thanks.
You're quite welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Next, we take another call from a listener in Champaign on line three. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Oh, okay, I'm on?
You are.
Okay, I'm sorry to I'm not clear what number was. I'm in the process of buying a new computer, and I was looking over the specifications, and I sort of have two questions for Mr. Kimball. One is that the monitors now are, many monitors are advertised as HD ready. You know, they're the 9x12 format. And so their resolution is 920 by 1080.
Yeah, 1920 by 1080.
Yeah, excuse me. And so, like, for example, Dell still sells what they call an ultra-sharp monitor, which is what I used to have at work, but its resolution is 1600 by 1200. And so, and they're selling that at a premium. So I guess my question is, I'm not sure that's a better monitor than a regular HD monitor. I'm not going to really be watching movies on this. It's primarily just for some web surfing and then some, you know, spreadsheet word processing work. So the question is, how do you help select the best monitor you might be able to get? And then what are the things of particulars that I should be looking for? You know, I'm thinking of a size somewhere like a 22 to 24 inch maybe. And then I guess maybe the contrast ratio and response time would be things that they normally list. But what would be a good choice for that, I guess, is my question. And I have one other second question, and that has to do with the optical drives they have now. Many computers just sell a DVD drive instead of a CD drive. And so the question is, can a DVD drive write or read a CD, or do I need to get a CD drive or convert all of my CDs to DVDs?
Well, I'll start with the second question.
Sure.
Because it's the simplest answer. Yes, any DVD drive that meets specifications, which is basically all of them, can also read CDs, and if, as most every DVD drive you get now in a new machine, can also write DVDs, so it can burn them, it can also burn CDs. So you don't need to have anything separate. What you do want to consider, as long as you're looking at the options, is whether you want it to be able to read, and more expensively, write Blu-ray DVDs, which are higher capacity. But a sweet price point these days is one that can read but not write Blu-ray DVDs, because if you buy the blank media, you can get a lot of information on them. But they can record and play back regular DVDs as well as CDs. They're all becoming very multifunctional. So,
oh, super. Okay.
That's not an issue.
Okay.
In terms of the monitors, the resolution, you mentioned the ultra sharp, which was 1600 by 1200, and that's the old nearly square 4:3 aspect ratio like you're used to using. And of course, the HD one is much wider, or the HD ready. But the resolution, 1920 versus 1080 or 1600 by 1200, in other words, square or more elongated, is only one of the factors in pricing of a monitor. You've mentioned several others. The refresh rate, the contrast ratio is significant. Another aspect that's significant in many cases, if depending on your setting, is how good the viewing is if you're not quite directly on access. Not much of a problem if you're always sitting right in front of it, but sometimes, as with LCD televisions, if you get a little bit off to one side, its quality is diminished significantly. In general, even if you're not going to be watching HD movies, I would tend to recommend, all else being equal, the wider one, because even if you're just surfing the web, that allows you more space to maybe have your email program open on one side. The extra real estate that you have and the width of the screen allows you to much more conveniently run two or three different programs at once and not have them stacked one on top of another.
Okay, good. I wasn't clear that the ultra sharp was still the old 5x4 format.
Well, you can tell by just looking at the resolution. If it's 1600 by 1200, you're looking at 4x3.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, good. Well, thank you very much. So
you're
then
quite
I have to worry about the DVD drive so much.
No, you don't have to worry about that in the least.
I just went through the 3.5 floppy to the CDs. I don't want to do that again.
No. And, of course, 10 years down the road, you know, the DVDs may be obsolete, but we can't worry about that yet.
Okay. Thank you very much for your help.
You're quite welcome.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. 10 years down the line, boy, the way things change, you just wonder.
Well, there'll be better technologies before then, but probably for the next 10 years, you'll still be able to buy machines with DVD drives.
Okay. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and this is our monthly look at computers. We take up the topic each month. Our guest this month is Peter Kimball. He is with the University of Illinois. He's with the university's technology consortium, which is called FAST3, and it's located at the Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, if you've got a question, a comment, if you need to some help with some troubleshooting regarding computers, give us a call and talk to Peter Kimball. He'll lend you a hand. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. No one's waiting at the moment. Well, at the outset, Peter, you mentioned that you had been playing around with Windows over the holidays. Windows 7?
Yes, I've upgraded a few machines now from Windows Vista to Windows 7. It went as smoothly as expected, which is to say, if you do what's called an in-place upgrade, it goes very smoothly with the expected issues that you're likely to have to get new drivers for things like printers to get full functionality. I was impressed, as a number of people in the press have been, with how well the whole upgrade process has been designed and tested by Microsoft this time. It's much smoother than the rocky upgrade path for many people when Vista first came out, which is not surprising because under its much more user-friendly public face, Windows 7 really is the next version of Vista. So when, in case anybody does this sort of an upgrade, it's, again, relatively simple. You have a choice when you're doing the upgrade. If you are going from, for example, Windows Vista Home Premium, one of the versions of Windows Vista, to Windows 7 Home Premium, or if you're going from any other equivalent version of Vista to the equivalent version of Windows 7, you can do what's called an in-place upgrade. It takes longer, but it makes a copy of absolutely everything, all your settings, all the desktop, the whole thing. And when you come back into Windows 7, it looks like exactly the way it was before. Nothing has changed except you're now running Windows 7 and the various improvements there will come into play. The only downside of that is that various printers may have only basic functionality. You can't do the fancy things like on a printer that does scanning and faxing until you download the new drivers, but that's automatic or nearly so anyway. So okay. It worked very smoothly.
Very good. Well, let's take another call. This is a listener on line 4 in Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon.
Hi. Hi there. I am looking for a second computer for the house, just under $200 to do basic functions, web surf and spreadsheets and word processing. I'm just wondering, I'm just not sure what I should be looking for or expecting for under that price, and is that realistic? I don't need a new monitor. I'm just looking for the tower and,
oh, that was,
and connectivity.
That was going to be my first question. If you don't need the monitor, then there actually are a number of systems that you'll be able to find for $200 or not much more than that.
Okay.
That you can get from either the, I think even the major manufacturers, Dell and HP, have systems that once you eliminate the monitor are down certainly under $300. Whether you're down to $200 or not, I haven't really checked lately.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I have no problem with going with refurbished or, you know, something used. I know that's a broad spectrum, but certainly I would think going that route, I'd be okay or not necessarily.
That would be perfectly all right. In fact, it's a very good use of old computer systems, and there are a number. I don't know what's there in your location, but certainly in Champaign-Urbana, there are two or three firms that have older computers that you can purchase. And what they will do, and what anybody should do, is totally wipe out the complete, just clean the hard drive down to, you know, practically the bare surface. Nothing is there, and then reinstall a clean copy of. Well, presumably what they'd need to install if it's an older machine would be Windows XP. Some of the machines that are older may not be able to support Windows 7 without significant hardware upgrades.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm sorry, I know you're busy. Just really quickly, what kind of, I haven't bought a computer in a long time. What kind of processing speed at a minimum should I be looking for, especially because I might be buying refurbished or older computer?
Well, and we're looking, I assume kind of, we sort of assume that we're looking at Windows machines here. So you'll be looking at either an Intel or an AMD processor, and the absolute minimum, even though you're going to be not doing much with it, I would look for a machine that has an absolute minimum of a 1 gigahertz processor.
Okay.
But more would be better, but at the same time, you don't have to go all the way to the top. I would also try to, you may not find the machine like this initially, but you would certainly be able to add to it. Make sure that you have at least 1 gigabyte of RAM memory, mm-hmm. random access memory, and 2 would be better. Nearly all old machines, at least back through the last 7 or 8 years, can handle up to 2 gigabytes, and that'll make a big difference no matter what sort of software you're running. The computer doesn't have to spend as much time swapping things between memory and the hard drive.
Okay.
So those
thank you very much.
Good luck.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other telephone calls are invited today for Peter Kimball. No one waiting at the moment. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, come Wednesday, Apple is expected to unveil a tablet,
yes.
computer, and this has generated a great deal of speculation about the product. Essentially, would this be a larger format iPhone?
That's the best description that I've heard, yes. Might be without the telephone features, but they may include that as well. There are a number of things they could do. But the iPhone, believe it or not, a lot of people use the iPhone for calling people. As well as all the various apps that are there. Certainly, it'll be network-enabled. It'll be Wi-Fi-enabled. Whether or not they're going to tie it to a telephone, you know, cellular service is, as far as I'm aware, still a fairly closely held secret. I haven't seen any information about that.
Yeah.
But, yes, think big, convenience screen, iPhone, maybe with or without the phone aspect of it, and that seems to be what most people expect to be announced. The other big question is, where is Apple going to price this? Above or below $700? $1,000 be at the high end. $500 seems lower than it's likely to be, but nobody really knows for sure until it gets announced.
Are there or have there been other tablet computers on the market? I know we know a little bit about the netbook, but has there been something sort of in between?
There have been. HP has had one for some time. I'm not sure of its current status. None of them have really taken off. There have been a number of technical issues, somewhat paralleling the difficulty in penetration that electronic readers such as the Kindle had. Early versions didn't really meet all the needs and weren't as convenient to use. They've gotten much better now, and now there's several other competing brands. So, yes, there have been tablets, but nobody's really made a hit, and that's, of course, what Apple is hoping to do, assuming they introduce the tablet.
Okay, well, let's go back and talk with some listeners waiting with us on the telephone lines this afternoon. We're going to take a call next from a listener in McLean County on line one. Hi.
Hi. I have a couple questions, and I'll try to make them brief. One of them is a question about, have you heard of Yahoo having problems with their email system by chance or not?
I haven't heard anything lately. Periodically, they have had every webmail-based company has a little bit of difficulty, but I have not heard anything specifically lately. Are you having difficulty accessing your mail?
Yeah, last 2-3 weeks, it would slow down to freeze. I would have to shut it down. Happened to be talking to a friend's husband. He said he had the same difficulty. And so his trick is to actually shut it down and start back up again. And it would just freeze, and I couldn't move the cursor, nothing. It was very annoying. I know it took me a long time. It's embarrassing to say. I finally somehow managed to find a spot, and they don't make easy to contact them.
No, they would much rather have you just deal with things on the web for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, and anyway, so it's just doing a little better, but I'm just thinking, it's just, if there's maybe there's other problems going on elsewhere, it isn't just me. Because I was afraid. My second question is, could it really be my computer? But see, when I do any web searches, I have no problems.
Right, and that does imply that it's a problem with that particular site, although the fact that it tends to lock things up is not particularly good. Let me see if I can find anything about that. There are a number of people who say this is much too general, saying problems with Yahoo email problems, but I see nothing that's really dated very recently. What browser are you using?
I think this one has XP.
The web browser, Internet Explorer Firefox?
Internet Explorer,
I would check on two things then to see if you can isolate this a little bit. One, it would be worth upgrading, if you have not already done so, to the most recent version of Windows Internet Explorer, which would be version 8. And the other thing you can do, which can kind of eliminate that problem, is download Firefox. It's the competing browser. You just go to www.firefox.com. And yes, you can do that using Internet Explorer. It will talk you through the process of downloading that. Then you'll have two browsers. You'll be able to still choose which one you want to have be your default browser and see if you have the same problems with that. If you have the same problems with the Yahoo Mail site, both with Internet Explorer and with Firefox, then the problem is pretty much certainly not with your computer.
Okay. All right. I had email. I took me forever to find, and I sent email to them. If I had to find it again, I wouldn't be able to find it. I think I just kind of ran into it by accident, and I was looking. Anyway, so it's been a little bit better, but I will do that because I think if I get stuck, I will try it because it's only a two-year-old computer, and I don't download a million things.
Right.
I mean, I just use it mostly for email and just a couple things. But thank you. That's a great suggestion.
Well, and the other thing, are you running Windows XP or Vista or
XP on this computer.
Okay.
It's a desktop, yeah.
The other thing you can try to do if it locks up is you can see if you can launch what's called the Task Manager, which would allow you to kill or to terminate that particular program, the Internet Explorer session. And you do that, unless the system is really completely locked up, by the three key press of Control, Alt, and Delete. Mm-hmm. Choose Task Manager. Mm-hmm. In Task Manager, you will then see a tab. It'll probably be the default one, Applications, and it'll list any programs you've got running. And you can click on one of the Internet Explorer ones and then there will be a button down at the bottom that says End Program telling Windows to give it the boot.
Okay, yeah, I've done that too, and it sometimes helped and sometimes it didn't, but it's a little bit better right now, but I will keep that in mind because I will get the Firefox, and I have friends who have it, actually prefer it, so it might be time for me to at least give it a shot.
Yeah, it's worth giving it a shot. There are some sites that will only work with Internet Explorer, those that use specific kinds of add-ons, but Yahoo Mail will work with either one.
Okay, last very quick question. I have a 3-in-1 HP, and I don't know any more than that, printer?
Yes.
Scanner? It drinks ink like water. And when I brought the inkjet, last time it said 200 pages, and I could swear it gives me no more than 50, 60 pages. And I always do the lowest setting possible. What can I do?
Well, that 200 page number is based on a page that has no more than 5% coverage, like a typewritten page. So anything that's got any graphics or even though you may not be using it for graphics, particularly web pages that have some image or some other graphic, will drink a lot more ink. But that is one of the major issues that people have with printers. The model is almost like the old Gillette razor model. We'll give away the shaver and you'll keep buying the blades, and that's why they can often give away the printers and you keep buying the ink.
Mm-hmm. Are there any printers that are better quality in the sense that they're not so ink hungry or thirsty or whatever?
There are some. What you're looking at is referred to as cost per page. And if you look at printer reviews, and you can just do inkjet printer reviews, or if you can afford it, and it's not that much now, go to a laser printer because they are much more economical. Yes, it costs a bit more to replace the toner cartridge, but it's much more economical per page. You can get a standard typewritten page cost down to 1 or 2 cents, 3 cents perhaps per page, which isn't bad for home printers. But that is one of the things you will find mentioned in a comprehensive review. What does it cost per page to print in terms of consumables?
Okay. And is that the one that uses toner? Is that
yeah, the laser jets use toner. Okay. It's a cartridge that goes in, as opposed to the ink jets, which use the little cartridges that have ink, the tiny little cartridges.
Right, right. Okay. All right, great. Well, thank you very, very much.
Uh-huh.
Thanks for the call. Next, we take a listener's call from Champaign. The listener is on line two. Hi.
Hi. Do you have a preference on a monitor, HP versus Dell, in size?
Both companies have a range of qualities. So HP versus Dell would be a hard thing to answer. I think that, and I haven't really checked on this lately, but of a given size, HP may, to my eye, be a little bit higher priced and a little bit better performance, a little visually better, but you get what you pay for. You can always up the level of the monitor that you get. If you look at the Dell site or you look at the HP site, you'll see several different monitors that seem almost identical, same resolution, different prices, and the specifications behind the scenes are different. Was the other part of your question in terms of size? Or?
Well, I was thinking of 22 to 24, but you said earlier contrast ratio higher is better. Is that correct?
That is correct. Basically, that's how much difference is there between the white screen and the darkest blacks that it can
What should you look for, like 20 or 30,000 or better than that?
Well, anything that high. The problem is that there's no consistent standard that people use to measure that. It's like in the old days of stereo systems where you would get all kinds of ratings that were done differently. Well, how are you measuring that is the underlying question. So, yes, 20 or 30,000 is fine, but it's quite possible that something that shows a contrast ratio of 1 or 2,000, if they are measuring it conservatively, may be just as good.
So I
would look at some of the reviews.
Better look at it if possible, then, I guess.
Or look at a couple of different review sites and see. Certainly things like PC World and CNET and PC Mag, but also Consumer Reports site, although I'm not sure that that's accessible free these days.
No, I have a Consumer Reports.
There are a lot of areas in technology that I wouldn't really spend a lot of time on the Consumer Reports site, but in terms of visual monitor quality and visual television quality for that matter, they do a pretty good job of testing, I think.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. And next we take a call from a listener on a cell phone on line three. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Echoing an earlier call, I am looking to buy a used notebook or a laptop. I wonder if you had any ideas. Mainly I would contact for email, and I do use Google on the web and Delicious. So I wonder if you had any ideas.
Well, the underlying question is when you're using Google and surfing the web, whether you are connecting to very many sites that that actually have video and you want the video to play smoothly or not.
I don't want video.
Okay. Then this pretty much the same answers that I gave the previous user. You'll want a processor that's at least at a gigahertz.
Right.
Anything slower than that could really be annoying under some circumstances, even if you're only dealing with email and with web surfing. You'll want to see if you're getting it used. Of course, you need to make sure that you're getting it from a reputable source. Oftentimes, a computer dealer, a used or computer refurbishing company can give you a certified system that has been completely cleaned, has a brand new version of the operating system installed on it.
Yeah, I have my own operating system.
Okay.
Multiple copies.
Okay. Then you're in good shape because if you just get one from almost any source, the first thing you'd want to do is completely format the hard drive down to nothing so that anything left over is completely gone.
Is there any I'm local in Champaign. Is there any company or something I could contact here, do you know?
There are, and I would have to look in the phone book to see what the current names are, but if you just look in the yellow pages under computers used or computers dealers, that would be my best suggestion for that.
All right. I'll go ahead and do that.
But you'll want to have a gigahertz. You'd want to have at least one gigabyte of RAM, and two would be better. And as long as you're looking at a laptop, the other thing you would like to see, you're going to have to either have a external network card that you plug into it, like a Netgear or something that will allow you to communicate wirelessly.
Mm-hmm.
Some machines have built-in wireless, but older machines may only be able to connect using older standards. So,
like for hard drive speed, is there any issue there?
Not much issue with hard drive speed these days. Capacity, almost any machine you're going to get, unless it's really old, for a laptop is going to have at least 80 gigabytes.
Right.
Many of them have a lot more. And since you're not going to be storing a lot of high density information, you should be fine.
No, I do it on the web. Yeah.
Okay. You should be fine with those. So make fast processor, get enough RAM, double check and see how you're going to do the wireless access, and you should be good.
Well, thank you. And for the caller with problems with Yahoo, I have two accounts and I've had no problems at all, so I don't know.
Well, hopefully she'll find that if she tries the other browser, that will indicate
I use Mozilla. And,
okay.
Yeah. And it works very well.
Well, that's good to hear.
Okay, well, thank you.
You're welcome. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Peter Kimball is with us this afternoon to answer our questions about computers. And we've just got a couple minutes left. We could probably take one more call. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. So here at the end of the day, at the end of the program, scammers are taking advantage of the devastating earthquake in Haiti and donations for relief. When it comes to making donations online, what should we be on the lookout for?
Well, the main thing to be on the lookout for is unsolicited emails that come and say, click here to make a donation, because you don't know where those are going to go. Many of the addresses were set up legitimately, but some of them not within the first few days of the earthquake. There were several hundred web domains created with Haiti earthquake or variations of that theme, some of them entirely legitimate, such as Hope for Haiti Now, the big telethon that went on. If you wish to donate online, the safest thing to do is to not respond to an email, to type the address yourself into a browser. It could be Red Cross, it could be UNICEF, it could be Hope for Haiti Now, and just make sure that you're not at one of these sites that looks legitimate and isn't.
Okay. I think this will be our last call this afternoon. Line one, Champaign. Hi.
Hi. Is there a way to query your computer to find out if there are other computers using your service?
So you have, I presume, then a wireless?
I have broadband.
Okay, you have broadband, and then you've got a wireless access point, like a Wi-Fi device attached to that?
Yes, I do.
And so you're concerned, are other people getting onto your Wi-Fi and kind of drive by, oh, look, here's an unsecured? The answer is yes, if that's the situation. First, a suggestion. What you should do, and you can do this, the documentation will have come with the wireless access point, the wireless device that you have. You can, with a machine that's wired into it, and temporarily you could even just take a laptop and wire it in with a little short Ethernet cable, and you can turn on wireless security. That means that it won't be sitting there open for anybody to use. They will have to have a password. That's what you want to do. Probably, if you haven't done that, there are people using it because it's any time that you start up a computer and look for wireless networks, you'll see any of them. And if they're unsecured, which they are out of the box, They can certainly grab a hold of it. So set that. You will then need on your laptop before you can connect it wirelessly to, it'll say, I'm connecting, what's the passphrase, and you'll have specified that. So then only people who know that passphrase will be able to get there. And when you do that, write it down and just, you know, tape it to the side of your access point. So if you have a guest or someone coming and they say, oh, I'd like to use this, what's the wireless password? You don't have to go back and try to dig it out. And it's completely secure having it taped. Nobody's going to be able to see what that is wirelessly, so just keep that safe. But that's what you want to do. Turn on what's called wireless security.
Okay. Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Any advice about passwords? There was an item in the newspaper not all that long ago that people are still using for a password, 123456.
Oh, all sorts of things. And the problem is that the programs and the hackers who are out there, they have those same lists of the 10,000 most commonly used passwords, and they can run through and check those within seconds in many cases. So the passwords should be a combination of upper and lowercase. Throw in a digit, throw in an exclamation point, throw in, you know, special characters. Make it at least 8 to 10 characters long, and don't use your dog's name, your pet's name, your address. Heaven forbid, don't use your Social Security number. And that it can be a bit of a pain to remember that, but you know, you don't really have to use a different password for every service. Non-critical services, like if I want to go and take a look at, you know, my rental car, or I want to go someplace else, I'll use a lower security password, but I'll use it the same for all of them so I can remember. XYZ is that one. And then the banking sites, I use something much more secure that's more difficult to type, but I want it to be more difficult to type.
Right, exactly. Peter, thank you so much. We'll see you in March.
Yes.
Okay, very good.
It might be spring.
Oh, we can hope. This is the Afternoon Magazine, Computers in You, a show we do once a month here on the Afternoon Magazine. It's 8 minutes before 2 o'clock. We turn things over now to Todd Gleason. He has settlement prices from us, or for us today, from the Chicago Board of Trade and the Board of Trade in Kansas City.
Absolutely. We sure do. Here are the numbers as they settled up in Chicago first. From the soft red winter wheat pit this afternoon, Celeste March contract there had a high price of $5.04, a low on its range at $4.96 and a quarter, with a settlement price at $4.98 and a quarter, down a quarter of a cent for that March soft red winter wheat lead option contract. May futures, a quarter of a cent lower, $5.17 and a quarter, the high, the low at $5.10, settlement price at $5.12, down a quarter. And July, the harvest month, $5.30, the high, the low at $5.22, settlement price at $5.23 and a half, down a half cent. From the Kansas City Board of Trade, nearby March, a settlement price today at $5.01 for the hard red, down 1 cent on the afternoon. Back in Chicago for the corn pit now, 3 cents higher on the afternoon in that nearby March contract, a $3.69 and a quarter high, range to a low of $3.65 and a quarter, with a settlement price at $3.67 and three quarters, narrow range and a small settlement price there, up 3 cents, though, still on the afternoon in the March corn contract at $3.67 and three quarters. May futures, $3.80 the high, the low at $3.76 and a quarter. Settlement price at $3.78 and three quarters, up 3 and a quarter. In July, $3.89 and a half the high, the low at $85 and three quarters. Settled $3.88 and a quarter, 2 and three quarters higher. September futures, $3.95 and a half the high, the low at $92 and a quarter. Settlement price at $3.94 and a half, up 2 and three quarters. In December contract, $4.01 and a quarter the high, the low at $3.97 and a half, settled $3.99 and three quarters, up 2 and a half cents. In the March contract, $4.11 the high, low at $4.07, settlement price at $4.09 and three quarters, up 2 and one quarter. December of 2011, a settlement price there at $4.16 and a half, up 2 and three quarters. March oat futures today, $2.37 the high, low at $2.27 and three quarters, settlement price at $2.33 and a quarter, up a quarter. May futures, $2.43 and one quarter the high, the low at $36 and a half, settlement price at $2.42 and a quarter, up a quarter on the afternoon. Now the soy complex. March soybean futures, a lot of red here, down 11 cents in the March, $9.56 the high, the low at $9.35 and a quarter, and the March soybean settled down 11 cents at $9.40 and a half a bushel. May futures, $9.64 the high, the low at $43 and a half, a settlement price at $9.49 and a half, down 9 and three quarters. And July soybeans, $9.70 the high, the low at $9.50 and a quarter, settlement price at $9.56 and a quarter, down 8 and a half cents. August contract, $9.62 the high, the low at $45 and a quarter. August futures in the bean pit settled $9.50, down 8 1/4. September futures, 9.43 the high, the low at 30. Settlement price at $9.35 a bushel, down 9.5 cents. In November, the harvest month, 9.38 1/2 the high, the low at 9.18 1/2. And new crop being settled at $9.25 1/2 in the November futures, down 7 3/4. January contract of 2011 there, 9.48 1/4 the high, the low at 31 1/2. Settlement price at $9.35, down 7 3/4. March bean meal futures now, 287.80 the high, the low at 282. Settled at 283, down 340. May futures at 280.80 top, bottom at 276. Even. Settlement price at $276.90 a ton, down $2.40 for the May soybean meal. March bean oil futures, $36.99 the high, the low at $36.23. March bean oil at $36.50 on the settlement price, down 21 cents. The May down 21 as well. Its settlement price at $36.95 with a high of $37.44. And a settlement price, or rather a low price at $36.67. Again, the May bean oil settled at $36.95. Down 21. I'll return in just 10 minutes now during the closing market report this afternoon. We'll talk with Kurt Kimmel. He's the senior grains analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And then later in that program, the folks at the Andersons will join us to discuss the agricultural marketplace. It all happens at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock Central Time, 10 minutes away. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities, presenting an Agricultural Outlook meeting on Saturday, January 30th at 10 a.m. Eastern Time in West Lafayette, Indiana at the University Inn. Lunch will be provided. More information is available at 866-837-9027.
Livestock contracts today, they finish lower in Chicago. February live cattle, 86.80 the high, 85.90 the low, 86.20 the settlement, that down 42.5. April, 90.60 the high, 89.85 the low, 90.17 1/2 the settlement, that down 37.5. June, 88.50 the high, the low, 87.80, the settlement, 88.20, down 10. August, 87.75 the high, 87.30 the low, the settlement 87.67 1/2, down 12.5. January feeder cattle 96.90 today's high, the low 96.50, the final 96.52 1/2, down 57.5. March 99.35 the high, 98.65 the low, the settlement 98.77 1/2, down 82.5. April $100.45 the high, 99.85 the low, 99.97 1/2. The settlement down 67.5. May $100.77 1/2, the high, the low $100.35, the settlement $100.55, that down 65. February lean hog 69.57 1/2, the high, the low 68.30, the settlement 68.37 1/2, down 147.5. April 71.80 the high, 70.45 the low, the settlement 70.50, down 147.5. May 74.65 the high, 73.80 the low, the settlement 74.35, down $1. And June lean hog 79.15 the high, 78.15 the low, the settlement 78.40, that down 95. And February bellies were down $3 today, 86 even the high, the low, and the settlement 83.50, again that down $3. The Dow is currently up 71 points at 10,244. The NASDAQ is up 14 at 2220. The S&P 500 10 higher at 1102. Nearby crude up 75 to 75.29 a barrel.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's 1 minute before 2 o'clock, 30 degrees in Urbana. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3, Urbana. Online at will.illinois.edu. Thanks for tuning in to the afternoon magazine today. My name is Celeste Quinn. Jason Croft is our technical director, the producer for the program, Harriet Williamson. The forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon, cloudy, windy, and colder, with periods of light snow. New snow accumulations will range from around 2 inches in northwestern Illinois to a trace in the south. Highs ranging from near 30 in northwestern Illinois to 42 in the far south. Tonight, cloudy, breezy with periods of light snow and little additional accumulation. Lows will range from 15 in northwestern Illinois to 28 in the south. And the outlook for tomorrow across the two states, cloudy.